Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hey everyone, welcome to this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. Of course, I'm Coach Al Lyman. I've got a really special guest with us today, and I couldn't be more sincere in conveying that. I have to say that in all of my years of running and training and study and reading that really goes back over the last 30 years, there's one person who I feel has been more instrumental in my own growth as a runner and as a coach, and that person is Dr. Owen Anderson. And Owen has agreed to join us today. Owen, how are you?
I am good, Al. It's great to talk with you. Really a pleasure to be on the podcast. Thanks so much for asking me.
Well, it's awesome to have you. You know, everyone that's out there is listening is thinking, yeah, of course, you know, Al says that about a lot of people, but in truth, you know, Owen, you're a guy who really first exposed me to so many new concepts about how to improve as a runner back in my first years reading Running Research News, which we'll talk about a little bit as we go, but this is probably going back to the, you know, to the late 80s or so. And I remember at the time so many of the concepts that you put out were so out of the norm in terms of how people typically approached training. And I found it fascinating, and interestingly, for a guy who I don't consider myself to have much talent, I had tremendous success using so many of the ideas and concepts that you presented. But before we get in and actually talk about some of those things, I first want to give our audience a chance to learn a little bit about who Owen Anderson is. And then I want you to talk, of course, about your new book. You've authored a number of books, from concepts related to how to lift lactate threshold to some workout books and so forth and so on. But this latest Running Science is just absolutely fascinating. And so give our audience a little bit of a background about who you are, how you got into studying running and coaching runners, and how you reached to this point in time.
Well, thanks very much. I'll give it a shot. You know, I've always loved running. I can even remember my first run when I was 2 years old. That's one of my first memories. It's just always something I've had a passion for. And about in 1985 or so, I thought to myself, there needs to be a better bridge between the scientific community and the running community. The running community kind of operates on tradition and things that coaches and runners have said over time, and some of the concepts may not stand up too well to scientific research. So I thought I could be that bridge, and I began writing about running. I started traveling to Kenya because I thought it would be good to not only know the science of running, but also just learn from the top runners in the world and study how they trained and what it took to make them successful. So really for the past, I guess, what would that be, 28 years? That's kind of scary when you think about it.
Right.
I've been writing about this. It's gone by really so quickly, but yeah. One of my goals has been to, as a scientist, convey the scientific research about running to the coaching and running communities so that they can be aware of what, you know, scientific research is saying about different aspects of training. I mean, you know, we've all, as an example, we've always said, well, lactic acid is kind of a bad thing. You got to be careful. It could hurt your muscles, and you have to be careful about your training, not do too much of speed training because it could produce this harmful lactic acid. And, you know, what the scientific research tells us is that lactate's a tremendous fuel for running, and you actually just want to generate a lot of lactate in workouts and get better at using it for energy. Different things like that. And of course, our traditional paradigm was that strength training was not so good for endurance running because strength training is anaerobic and running a 10K is aerobic. So we tended to shy away from strength training, but now we know from the scientific research that strength training is valuable in so many ways for endurance runners. I mean, it improves maximal speed, and that's another change too. We know that maximal speed is linked to everything, even marathon running. And strength training can improve running economy, fatigue resistance, help prevent injury. So it's a great just kind of anchoring point of training. And we know too that that old paradigm of anaerobic versus aerobic is not a good place to hang your hat for training because, you know, really running revolves around, you know, developing the nervous system, and the nervous system really develops everything. In the old days, we thought it was all about the heart and the muscles, and the nervous system was just kind of watching and responding. So we've had these big changes in the scientific field, and one of my roles is to try to convey that information over to coaches and runners so that they can use that information in a practical way. So I've had that kind of passion to write about running, and I've done some coaching as well. I've coached runners of all ability levels, and I have a team of elite runners who have performed really well, and also decided, in a crazy moment, I decided it would be a good idea to become a race director of a marathon.
Yeah. So that's a little crazy on your part.
Very, very crazy.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that since 2011, and we've had two Lansing marathons take place. Our third will be on May 4th, 2014, but it is a crazy undertaking, but very enjoyable, too. I mean, one of the big thrills in life is to see runners whose, you know, dreams sort of revolve around running a marathon or half marathon come across the finish line on race day. That's very, very thrilling.
Yeah, for sure.
So I've really enjoyed that. And as you mentioned, I've continued writing, and the latest book is Running Science, and that's published by Human Kinetics, and that was meant to be a comprehensive book on running, covering, you know, anything that you could think about pertaining to running, genetics, training itself, strength training for running, cross training, psychological aspects of running, periodization, optimal overall training programs, sports nutrition, of course, injury prevention, just all topics that you could conceive of were the focus of this book. So it's a big one. It's about 608 pages, and you know, it was an undertaking to write, a lot of fun to write, and fortunately, it's finished. It's been out since July, and very fortunate to have good reviews on it. And even if you don't write, even if you don't like the book, it makes a great doorstop or even a cure for insomnia. But at any rate, it's produced a really good response and getting
a doorstop getting and a cure for insomnia. Not so much, Owen. Not so much. You know, all of our listeners are going to be fascinated with the topics that you discuss in detail in your book, Running Science. And just to reiterate that, for any folks that are interested in getting their own copy, it's published by Human Kinetics, which is really recognized as the leader around the world for this type of book. So kudos to you for working with Human Kinetics.
Thank you very much.
That's great. Yeah. You know, it's always fascinating for me, Owen, to think back to those early days where you began to produce running research news, and I don't even know if that newsletter exists anymore. I know that you're no longer doing it. So in my eyes, I have less interest in reading it if it in fact it does exist. But I can say certainly to the listeners out there if you want a body of information, science-based, practical information that, and Owen, you're a great writer, I mean, very entertaining, go get old issues of Running Research News. And of course, along with that, folks can get onto your website as well, which I believe is educatedrunner.com, which of course runs along with the same kind of thinking. And, you know, I want to say to all of our listeners, you know, if I, from my own perspective, one thing that I'm very proud of as a coach in this day and age is that every single thing that I write either for an athlete that I work with or that I've used to create training plans for our team here at Pursuit Athletic Performance or the recommendations that I make to athletes that come in for gait analysis, these are all things that I myself have done. I have tested. I've been through. I've had every injury. I've recovered from those injuries. I've tried every kind of training protocol. And so what I present to athletes I know works because I've done it. But interestingly, everything we do here at Pursuit Athletic Performance is all it's also based on real science. You know, there's something there that is really science-based. And I've always appreciated that everything you've always presented has emanated ultimately from what exists out there in the scientific community. So much of what coaches do today, as you mentioned earlier, is just based on tradition or based on some bad, in some respects, bad ideas that have just been passed on, and therefore people keep doing them, right? Without really having a reason to do it, without really looking at something logically and from a scientific perspective, and then adding in a practical element to test something out. And you've done a great job, really, from the beginning of combining those practical applications with the science. But let me throw out a question for you on this topic. You know, early on, when you presented the concepts of, for example, combining strength training and endurance training, which, as you know, has not typically been the accepted norm in the running community, but right. You presented it and not only presented the science to support it, but also the practical ways in which it could be utilized. How did you deal with or handle what were obviously a bunch of naysayers? I mean, people that said, hey, that's not going to work, or, you know, that's not the way we do it, or, you know, because you were truly on the cutting edge. A lot of what people do today that it's accepted as norm is something that you presented many years ago. What were your thoughts regarding presenting those ideas that I'm sure at first were rejected by many people?
Yeah, they really were, Al. I mean, there was a big resistance to resistance training. And again, if you think about running in a traditional way, you just say, well, you know, lifting a weight is so different from running a 10K or a marathon. How can that be applicable to our events? And again, the old way of thinking was strength training is anaerobic. We're training our aerobic systems, and it's just not going to be helpful at all. We're going to maybe add body mass, and we're going to have to carry that mass around in our, you know, in our workouts and our competitions, and it just can't be a good thing. The best runners are skinny, scrawny fellows, so we should forget about this whole strength training concept. But, you know, you just keep moving forward. The research is really consistent on strength training and its benefits. I mean, we see now research showing us that runners who strength train are much more resistant to injury. They have better running economy. They're more fatigue resistant. They're faster. I mean, we have study after study now showing that explosive strength training does produce faster speeds. And faster speeds we can define as, you know, speed over 200 or 300 meters, but also average speed over a 3K or a 5K or 10K, because maximal speed drags all other speeds up with it.
Sure.
So the research has just been really consistent on that, and so I've just kept reporting it. And, you know, I've been coaching too since 1994, really, and using strength training with runners that I've been fortunate enough to work with, and just seems to be really effective. I mean, it's just, you have to think that high quality strength workout is better than just going out and pounding along for many, many miles at a medium intensity. And you're always looking for ways in training to, you know, produce that adaptation that you want.
Right.
And strength training just, strength training just produces so many great adaptations.
Yeah.
And of course, as the research developed, we then started to see that, you know, strength training for running could be general. You know, some general strength training, whole body type strength training, was good for coordination and fatigue resistance, but that the really effective strength training was running specific strength training, and that is resistance training that mimics the mechanics of running. You know, doing a lot of things with body weight supported on one leg at a time, and just mimicking different aspects of gait. And that kind of training is really rare, I'd have to say. I don't see a lot of athletes doing it. So it can give the individual runner a big edge. I mean, if he gets into running specific strength training, he or she can, you know, can put more force on the ground with each step, be more coordinated, more balanced, more explosive, and can really develop in that way. So it's a tremendous and kind of untapped tool at this point.
Right.
I don't see a lot of runners who have just a systematic way of developing, you know, running specific strength. We do hear runners talking about strength, and they say, well, I need to get stronger. But usually they define that strength as something that can be gained by running more miles per week. They say, well, I'm running 50 miles a week. If I run 70 miles per week, I'm going to be stronger and tougher.
Right.
But they forget again that strength is running specific. It's also velocity specific. You know, you may be strong at slow speeds while running, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to use that strength at higher speed as well.
Right.
So,
you know, it's interesting. I often say to runners that when we're discussing these concepts of strength training and running, that in fact running, if you're doing it without any supplemental strength work, actually will weaken you over time because of the effects of gravity and ground reaction forces really working down on you, especially if most of your running is done on a flat road. You're not really introducing any hill work, even at a moderate intensity. And I think we see this here in our lab, Owen. We see runners that come in, they come in for an analysis, and they're demonstrating a lot of weakness, some compensation, especially through the hip musculature, changes in their core stability and strength, which means a lot more load on the low back, and some changes over time. Again, just a repetitive motion, which running is, right? Just in one predominant plane of motion just leads to some weaknesses in other planes of motion, which ultimately weaken the body. So you'd be thrilled, I think, to come and or excited. Maybe I'm not objective, to come into our lab and see our system, where we really work on movement quality first and foremost. That is balancing out the body, looking at muscle length and joint mobility, and assessing where an individual is at there. Then assessing their core stability and making sure that they understand how to develop that, and then develop a stronger core, and then look at running specific exercises that are all based entirely on movement quality and perfect execution of an exercise. Because of course, what we're doing, especially at those basic levels or those introductory levels of strength, is training our nervous system, right, to create the correct pathways, the wiring that's necessary to make sure everything is working. And I'll tell everybody out there, you were the first guy, the first writer, the first scientist to really get me thinking about the nervous system as it related to running. And it's now something that I discuss every single day of the week with every person that I work with here in our lab. Talk about that element just a little bit, because I think most people, even in this day and age, and I shake my head sometimes because it is 2013. I mean, folks, come on, get with it. But everybody, you know, that's out there that starts a running program, they all get wrapped up in the cardiovascular conditioning aspects. You know, I got to get my cardio. I got to do my heart rate training. They forget or aren't even aware of the neural aspects of the coordination, of the fact that there's no such thing as muscle memory if the nerve isn't connected and communicating with tissue. Then that tissue is just a hunk of meat. So talk, if you would, for a moment about the neural aspects of running and how critical this whole concept is for someone to improve and get faster and also stay healthy.
Yeah, thanks, Al. That's so true. You know, in the old days of running, we thought that everything was about the heart and the muscles. And so training was, you know, revolved around improving aerobic capacity. The heart was the oxygen pump and the muscles were the oxygen receivers. And you went out and tried to train in ways that optimized, you know, both of those ends of the oxygen delivery and utilization system. So people said, well, what can we do for training? And of course that led to the idea that more volume was better, because if you ran more miles, that developed the heart more. And the walls of the heart became thicker and the heart could pump out more oxygen. But of course the problem, as you mentioned, is that, you know, in that system, the nervous system is just kind of waiting in the background to see what the heart and muscles do, and just kind of responds to the heart and muscles. But it's really the other way around. The nervous system is directing everything. The muscles don't operate without control of the nervous system. And in fact, you know, under the old system, we talked about, you know, speed development, which is so critical for competition. But in the old paradigm, speed development was a function of, you know, developing anaerobic enzymes in the muscles. And that was kind of a risky thing to do. You didn't want to do too much of it because it would convert the muscles from aerobic muscles over to anaerobic muscles. So it was kind of a, you know, strange and risky thing to do, something you don't want to do for 4 to 6 weeks or so.
Right.
But the truth is that speed develops because of nervous system control. I mean, speed is a function of, you know, greater neural output, greater neural drive to the muscles, and the ability to generate muscular force more quickly. As you said, the muscles can't do that on their own. You know, under the old system, you trained, you ran lots of miles, you did a bit of speed training, and you kind of hoped that magical speed dust would be sprinkled on you as a result of your hard work. But we know now that you have to develop the nervous system. You've got to develop a nervous system that gets the foot on and off the ground more quickly. If you want to get faster, you've got to get your feet on and off the ground more quickly. And during that more abbreviated ground contact time, you've got to produce more force, you know, than you did before, if you want to be faster. Now, that's not going to be a heart function. That's not going to be something that the muscles will do spontaneously. That's something that's driven by the nervous system. So therefore, you're training your nervous system to do those things, produce more force and produce that force more quickly. The muscles muscles and heart are responding to the nervous system, not the other way around. The other really interesting thing that's developed too is the fact that most fatigue originates in the brain as well. You know, in the old days, we thought that fatigue represented a muscular crisis. And it's true that if your muscles run out of glycogen, you're going to feel fatigue and have difficulty continuing. Most fatigue actually, you know, comes from the nervous system. You know, the nervous system has a way of governing exercise intensity, and it can decide to, you know, produce a great sensation of fatigue and slow you down, you know, if it believes that you're exceeding your capacity. So you have to develop, you know, that system of tolerating higher intensities of exercise. you can call that governing system the neurogovernor or the anticipatory regulatory system, but it's there. And it's something that you work on in training so that you can run faster for longer, you know, if you want to be fitter, if you want to compete more successfully. So our whole way of thinking is really different now. We're to get speed, we're not, and competitive ability, we're not running longer, we're running more effectively, and we're focused on developing speed 50 weeks out of the year, not 6 weeks, but 50 weeks, because you're constantly working on your nervous system to make it better.
Right.
And to reduce fatigue, again, we're working at higher levels, higher intensity levels. In the old days, that would be bad because they would be anaerobic, but we know that actually these higher intensities are maximally aerobic, because that's when you get, you know, up to VO2 max and you stay there during training, and that develops not only your aerobic capacity but also your running velocity, your minimal running velocity at aerobic capacity or little v VO2 max.
Right.
And that these higher qualities are really great for you. So things have really been transformed. And, you know, conveying that to, you know, the general coaching community and running communities, I think is very important.
Yeah, that's some really, really good stuff there, and certainly something that I can say I've really come to understand in a practical way through my own training, and then I see it every day here in our lab. You know, I think in an earlier podcast, I had alluded to Dan Coyle's book, The Talent Code. And I'm not sure if that's a book you've read or that you're familiar with. I think there's a few now that are out that are looking at how the brain functions, how we learn as human beings, and all of that, all of those concepts sort of revolve around this wiring, right? These motor pathways. And we see here every day in our lab that so much of the training that we do for athletes, especially those that have been in a chronic state of injury where there's some compensation and or dysfunction, where things are not really working as they should, that so much of that training has to be taken down to a very basic level where it's largely brain training, right? Even developing basic core stability and engaging everything appropriately, is it's all happening between the ears. And when someone really wraps around, you know, their mind around the concept of that and understand that whatever it is that you're practicing, whether it's a good pathway or a less than optimal pathway, is what's going to become habitual over time. So
yeah,
it really brings in this concept of perfect practice and really starting at the beginning and really developing things in what I think of, Owen, is sort of an authentic way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the concepts you've talked about with really getting faster by thinking about your nervous system, right? Not just pounding out more miles is brilliant. And, of course, it is still resisted by a lot of folks out there that just think, hey, I'm just going to train harder, I'm just going to go longer, and inevitably what I see is those folks end up broken, they end up injured and or burnt out instead of really looking at their training in a very holistic way. You know, on this topic, let's take it a little bit further. Let's give our listeners something to chew on. If you were going to consult a beginning runner who wanted to be faster and get better, what would be the general path of training that you would recommend that runner move through? And I'll say that knowing that the typical average runner that's up out there signing up for the Lansing Marathon right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking, hey, I got to run more. You know, I got to run
yeah.
more miles. I got to run more frequently. And if I can just
yes.
run more, I'll be able to run faster. But you and I know there's a better path. Share
yeah.
with our listeners what that general path might be.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Al. You know, it's so exciting for runners starting out to think about what lies ahead and maybe thinking about 10K, half marathon, marathon, and just getting really geared up for their program. And of course, when it comes to the half marathon or marathon, they start thinking, well, I've got to develop this ability to run long and extend my volume of training and do more long runs. But I think it's really important to have a good foundation, you know, first before you really look at the longer running and building up the volume, the number of miles per week. And I think that foundation is consists, first of all, of good running form. You know, again, this is going to be so critical. It is critical from an injury standpoint, but also just from a running economy and running well standpoint, too. We do have these kind of shocking studies that show that 70 to 90% of people who are training for a marathon get injured,
right?
You know, at some point in the training program. And that's not necessary. You know, that's not an inevitable part of marathon training. You can train as long as you get a good foundation, you set up a good program of training with recovery built in, you can move toward that marathon, you know, with a really low risk of injury. But it starts at the beginning. I think you've got to have good running form established. You know, we know that 90 to 95% of runners, endurance runners, tend to be heel strikers. They tend to hit the ground with a relatively straight leg with the heel out in front. And we just know that that is a style of running that's bad for economy, increases impact forces traveling up the leg. It's bad for performance. It slows you down. If you hit on the heel and then have to rock forward onto the foot, you not only lengthen your stance phase of running, but you have to do all that work to get your body over your foot instead of bouncing forward. So I think it's really important to start off with good form, you know, developing good form, and that means midfoot striking, landing with a good shin angle relatively perpendicular to the ground at impact. Good cadence, good bounciness, slight forward lean of the body. And it's really important to establish those patterns before you, you know, embark on a program where you're learning to run with form that's suboptimal. So I think that has to be part of the beginning. And, of course, the other part is to start off with strength training. You know, if you really do want to advance as a runner, you not only need to be cautious about balancing your training with good recovery, but you also need to be strong so that you can stand up to those 180 impacts per minute, you know, the impacts with the ground that you have on each step.
Right. What I think of is 1,500 one-leg squat jumps in a mile, basically, is the way I convey it to athletes, you know. Mm-hmm. They never really think of it that way, but it's a tremendous amount of repetitive load, right?
It really is, yeah. You've got to force 2 to 3 times body weight, you know, passing through the leg. And you're right, you're doing one-leg squats over and over again. So you have to build up that strength so that you can stand up to the training you'd like to do. You know, we all have dreams and we're excited about running the marathon or half marathon, but important to prepare for it and have the strength to stand up to the necessary training. So, you know, starting off with general strength training and getting your body strong from your toes up to your head and then moving into running specific strength training is really important before you begin advancing the miles too much. And the good thing is that it can be a lot of fun. I mean, people say, oh, strength training, I don't want to do that 3 times a week for an hour, but you can really vary it. You can be progressive with it. You can do lots of different things. And it's really, you know, a fun addition to your overall running training and much more exciting and interesting than just covering miles. But that's the foundation. And then, of course, you have to really do some things that are quality. so that your fitness can advance. You want to keep inching your way forward with your fitness. And so one of the things that any runner can do is the simple 6-minute VO2 max test. And you can do that even if you've just been running for a month or two. And it'll lead to some very high quality workouts for you. And that involves, of course, just going out to a track or using a GPS to monitor how far you go and, you know, warming up and running as far as you can in 6 minutes. And that average pace will be a good estimate of what we call your VO2 max, which is your minimal running velocity that causes you to reach your maximal aerobic capacity.
Right.
That turns out to be not only a measure of your fitness, but also a great training intensity too. So many beginning runners just, you know, wonder what kind of pace should I use, you know, when I try to do a quality session. And VO2 max is a great training intensity. It's not maximal speed, but it is moving right along. It's faster than 5K speed. And you can do just very basic workouts, you know, running 400s, for example, at VO2 max. And they're very simple workouts, but very effective, and they help to move fitness forward, and they're a nice balance with the strength training that you're doing and also the just kind of general running at medium paces that you do too. So I think that's the way to start out.
Yeah,
building your form, you know, getting into a strength program, being really cognizant of recovery, and just doing quality things and not being quite so aggressive with running, you know, high mileage.
Those are some great recommendations, Owen. Good stuff. You know, it's interesting how, as you alluded to earlier, this idea that velocity at shorter distances really does begin, when applied in a smart way in a training program, to lift velocities at longer durations. Because I think the first time that I was introduced to the concept of velocity VO2 max, or what I've thought of at one time, is basically 1 mile race pace. But depending on the level of an individual runner, it may be plus or minus a mile, of course. Mm-hmm. But that whole idea of doing sessions at training sessions at that velocity. Many athletes have a tough time wrapping their brain around the idea that that would be applicable not only for 5K runners, but for marathon runners and even for ultra-distance runners as well.
It's really been cool out the way this has developed because, you know, we've seen from the scientific research that even though in the old days we would say that aerobic capacity was everything, for 10K success, for example, or marathon success, you know, and runners tried to maximize their VO2 max or maximal aerobic capacity. But what we saw in the research was that if you looked at runners who trained in a fairly similar way, VO2 max did a really poor job of predicting performance.
Right.
But rather it was, you know, running speed over short distances like 200 or 300 meters. That did a great job of predicting performance among endurance runners. And people looked at that and said, that's just crazy, because 200 meters is anaerobic and a 10K or marathon is aerobic, so how can that be? But what they were forgetting is that if you have that ability to get your foot on and off the ground quickly and produce a lot of force while your foot is on the ground, you're going to be a good 300-meter runner, but you can be a good 10K runner and marathon runner too, you know, because your nervous system permits that higher quality running at everything you do, you know, whether it's a 300-meter blast or a marathon.
Right.
And, you know, in the old days, we would have said, oh, this endurance runner is good at 300 meters. He's got, he must have fast twitch muscle fibers. But no, it's not necessarily fast-twitch muscle fibers. It's the nervous system, you know, has developed the ability to be powerful, to produce power, you know. And So that's why we have good predictive power of these shorter distances for longer distances. And of course,
right.
That's why we see these, you know, these Kenyan marathon runners who are running good marathons. They're sub 4 minute milers. You know, they've got great speed, and they just extend that speed over long distances.
Right. Yeah. There are, of course, all of these concepts which, you know, relate in part to Horwell's Law, which I think you've written about before, and of course, they became what so many runners out there are now familiar with as far as Jack Daniels' VDOT charts and all of that, that relationship
right.
of the shorter distance to the longer distances. So many, it's funny, I just laughed to myself, coaches in various training programs that are out there today that think they've invented this idea of quality over quantity, when in truth this has been in existence for so long and the science is so solid. And again, mm-hmm. thank you to presenting so much of it and making so much of it accessible to so many runners and coaches worldwide. I mean, you've just done a tremendous job with that.
Thank you very much for that, Al. My latest writing, as you mentioned, is on educatedrunner.com. And people can also get the book Running Science at educatedrunner.com or from the Human Kinetics website.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Well, one thing I want to share before we sign off today is, and I know our listeners are going to be excited, you've agreed to join us on a regular basis here on our Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast, because there's so many more topics for us to discuss. I want to talk about this idea of applying force to the ground and energy leak and how that actually creates stride length, and by reducing that contact time turns into stride rate, all of these concepts. I want to talk more about this idea of genetics versus nurture and all of that. I know you've got some secrets to share with our listeners about how the best runners in the world are training and what they themselves could do to mimic some of those aspects. And we've already shared a lot of that today, of course. But there's so much stuff for us yet to discuss, and I'm so excited and so appreciative that you're gonna join us on a regular basis. So all of the listeners can stay tuned. We'll get you on as frequently as we can, and you know, I'm gonna say right now, I'm gonna try to make it out for the Lansing Marathon if you'll hold a spot for me next spring. That might be kind of fun.
Al, you've not only got a spot in the marathon, but you've got a spot here in the north wing of my house. I'll be glad to.
All right, excellent, good stuff. Yeah,
great.
I mean, I love Michigan. I don't know if you know, but of course, in my many years as a percussionist in the Coast Guard band, we traveled to Michigan every year because, of course, Grand Haven is Coast Guard City, USA, and
right.
So it's a beautiful state, a wonderful place, and it's better now because it's got you running the Lansing Marathon, even though I'm sure that there are some days when you're probably shaking your head going, what did I do this for? Well, Owen, thanks so much for joining us. There's some real nuggets in here for our listeners, and I really appreciate it. We'll be talking again soon. So again, for everyone out there, educatedrunner.com is where you can get some additional tips from Owen, purchase Running Science, and Lactate Liftoff, which I believe is another of your books, and some other great
right.
resources. And of
Thank
course,
you.
Human Kinetics as well. Without question, Owen, you're one of the world's leading experts on running and running science and how to be a better runner, and always leading all of us into the next century in terms of how we think about being better and living healthier through smart run training. And I really, really appreciate you joining us today. So
great pleasure.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you too. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we will talk soon. So everybody signing off here in sunny Old Saybrook, Connecticut. Thank you for joining me on this edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. Have a great day, everybody. Run smart, run safe, run healthy, and be great. Thanks, Owen.
You bet. Thank you so much, Al. Great to be with you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.